Tonight's Shiur was brought about from a combination of different factors. So it started out as a potential Shaila of the week, a real issue that came up. And since it is getting close to Hanukkah, so I figured it's close enough to Hanukkah as well. I don't know whether we'll have Shiur next, we'll talk about it at the end of tonight, but at least we'll hop around a little bit, something that's relevant in terms of both a real life Shaila in terms of a Shabbos, and touches on something young with Hanukkah as well. So I think that the topic, I don't remember if it was my type or somebody else's type, but it's supposed to be Lachas Neir Chanukah, not Lachas Neir Shabbos. So I guess the person saw the word Shabbos in there, so we assume that the word Shabbos is the second time, it's a Lachas Neir Chanukah. So let's begin this sugya with a little bit of a background to where the Shaila actually began. Somebody came to my house last Friday night, and their child had just gotten hurt, nothing terrible, but the doctor had assessed that the child did need stitches. So the question was how to get to the person to the hospital in order to get the stitches. It was a really technical issue. Baruch Hashem, we were able to get the proper vehicle, whatever the case was, and get the person to the hospital. So the person did not ask me the question, but if the person would have asked me the question, then it would have made a good cheer. So it was the potential shout of the week that wasn't there. Very often, when a person requires stitches, so there's a certain amount of stitches that are, in a sense, quote-unquote, needed medically. And then there are other stitches that are not absolutely critical medically. Nothing's going to happen to the person in terms of infection. Infection will be taken care of with the X amount of stitches. However, you know, the protocol would dictate to stitch more to prevent scarring, etc. Almost what we recall, in a certain sense, cosmetic. So the question becomes, in terms of the Shabbos, if we're dealing, let's say, for argument's sake, we're dealing with a Jewish doctor, we're dealing with a doctor who's asking a Shaila, am I permitted to do stitches that are more than absolutely medically necessary? So we assume that any wound that needs stitches is a potential chashash because of nefesh, so you potentially get chalila infected. So we are going to permit the basic stitches. The question is there anything problematic going, in a certain sense, above and beyond the call of duty? So the person did not answer the shaila. I was not going to volunteer the shiur at the time. But let's see if we can analyze the sugya and try to understand why there's some very strong grounds in halacha to actually permit doing the entire stitching, even that part of the stitching that's not absolutely emergency measures. So the sugya actually begins in Masechah Shabbos, but not really about Shabbos per se. The sugya actually begins concerning bris milah. The Gemara tells us in the first of the sources, in Shabbos Kufam Gimel Beis, the Tana Rabbanu, learned it in Braisa. Hamal, if a person is performing a bris, kol zman shu osek b'milah, as long as he's still involved in the bris, there are different questions as to where do you draw that line. What's called still involved? He's still holding the knife. He hasn't finished. He hasn't closed up. That different gradations as to what exactly is called still being osek. We're not going to define that right now. The mole is still halakhically involved in the bila, and then he realizes that he didn't quite finish the job. So no problem. Chayze bein latzitzin ma'achvin esamila, bein latzitzin she'ein ma'achvin esamila. So he is supposed to go back and finish the job, but there are two different types of going back. There are two different problems. There's what's called a tzitzinem ha'akfidus amila, which means that he didn't cut off the entire orla. Part of the skin that was supposed to be removed was not removed, and so much of it is left to the point that the child is protected with orla, so he didn't finish the mitzvah yet. So the Braisa tells us that as long as he's still, you know, literally or figuratively holding the knife, he has to go back both for the tzitzin that on the akfid that are critical, and he even has to go back for the tzitzin she'ein ma'akfidus amila. Even though the going back for these tzitzin, a little piece of skin is still there, that would not invalidate the milah. Nevertheless, as long as he's still holding on to the knife, whatever that means, he should go back and fix that as well. So again, we have two different kinds of tzitzin. There are tzitzin, little strands of flesh, little strands of skin. So sometimes there's so much there that would invalidate the milah. There's sugyas masechta Shabbos, just how much that is collectively. And sometimes it's such an insignificant amount that wouldn't invalidate the milah, but as long as he still hasn't finished, he should go back to fix everything. But now the magic word becomes pirish. He stopped. He finished. He wrapped up the baby, put on the diaper. He's downstairs eating his bagel and lox. And he comes up an hour later, look at the baby, and says, oh my goodness, I didn't finish the job. So the bride says, now it depends. Pirish, if you already finished, I'll sit to the machmas and milah chazi. You better go back and fix the bris. If there's enough orla there that's going to disqualify the milah, it's going to make the child to remain an orel, so for sure he has to go back. But I'll sit such a was the left. All he left behind was a little bit here and there. It's not so terrible anyway. If it doesn't invalidate the meal anyway, he does not go back. So here the Gemara doesn't spell out precise. Yes, another sugya of the Shabbos. So the Gemara speaks about rove. The question is rove of where? How, which part exactly that Ava do you measure? So that's a little bit unclear and how you measure it. So but it's some kind of a function of the job. So comes Rashi on the spot, and he has one word that doesn't appear in the Gemara. Rashi tells us, Hamal, Tech of the Mamma Gamus, B'Shabbos, Rashi says the entire sugya is obviously talking about the bris that's taking place on Shabbos. And we know that if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, and Yilud is not as Lech Shabbos, so says Rashi, obviously that's the context of the sugya. What made it so obvious to Rashi to add that word? Because it's not on Shabbos, why should we hesitate to go back? So why does the Braisa say that if you finish the job and now you realize an hour later, don't go back? Why not shouldn't you go back? You should make the meal the proper. Isn't there a concept of Hinda Mitzvah? You're supposed to cut off the entire oil. It's not supposed to look messy. So why in the world would Chazal hesitate to tell you not to go back if it wasn't talking about the fact that we have a Chil Shabbos issue on our hands? So according to Rashi, the whole thrust of the sugya is talking about on Shabbos. But if this scenario would happen on a weekday, so then of course you would go back under all circumstances. And presumably the driving force to make you go back would be the concept of Hidur Mitzvah. So in that one word, Rashi, the Shabbos, Rashi gives us an entire view of what the sugya is talking about. Shabbos encounters the Chol. On a Yom Chol, you go back under all circumstances. Comes the Rambam, the third of the Mamikom, the Truchas Mila Perek Beis Lachat Alas, Hamal, Kozman Sh'ozik V'mila, Choz Ben Atzitzin Shem Akvin, Ben Atzitzin Shem Akvin, Piresh, Atzitzin Akvin Chozer, Tzitzin Eino Chozer. The Rambam quotes the Gemara verbatim and did not conveniently add in the word B'Shabbos. Not only did the Rambam not insert the word B'Shabbos into interpreting the Braisa, but we don't have the whole Rambam in front of us right now, but if you take a look at Perek Beis, in Perek Beis, the Rambam has not even introduced to us the din that Milas Dech HaShabbos. He doesn't get to that until 3-4 halachas later. So obviously, in halacha da'alad, he's talking about paying b'chol b'ayim b'shabbos. He's talking about a regular bris on a regular Tuesday, that when the b'raisa says, you finish the job, and all you have is a little bit of a little skin left, it's not so important, the b'raisa is saying, you don't go back for that. So this is diametrically opposed to Rashi Shita. According to Rashi, you always go back on a weekday. There's no reason not to, and there's every reason to because of Hidda Mitzvah. Whereas according to the Rambam, you don't go back even on a weekday. And of course, the question is obvious. According to the Rambam, why don't you go back? What do you have to lose by going back? It's Tuesday afternoon. You're allowed to do malach on Tuesday. So why don't you go back, touch up the mila, and make it look pretty? Isn't there a principle called Hidda Mitzvah? So there is a whole discussion about the Shittas Rambam. This has been a famous Rambam for many generations in the world of Brisk. The Beis HaLevi, Reb Chaim's father already started discussing this, and then the Brisker Rav continued two generations later, and then since then and before that and after that, there's been ongoing discussion about the significance of this Rambam and different nuances as to what exactly the Rambam is saying. We're going to present one side. This is not necessarily what everybody who based Brisk says. We're going to present one possibility, B'dasa Rambam. Why is it that the Rambam says that it's just not Kedai, don't bother going back after the Brisk is over? The Rambam apparently understood that Hidur Mitzvah cannot take place in a vacuum. The goal of Hidur Mitzvah, beautifying a mitzvah, is to beautify a mitzvah, b'shas ha-mitzvah. At the time that I'm doing the mitzvah, then it makes sense to do a mitzvah in a way that's mehudar. If I did the mitzvah an hour ago, and I'm coming back an hour later, and I'm trying to chaperize the Hidur Mitzvah, not in the context of the mitzvah itself, it doesn't register. There's no such thing. Hidur Mitzvah is not a separate kiyum, not a separate fulfillment. Do the mitzvah at 8 o'clock, and then do the Hidur Mitzvah at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The idea of Hidur Mitzvah is, if and when you're doing the mitzvah, do the mitzvah bihidura. And if the mitzvah is over already, then the Hidur doesn't really make any sense. So therefore, the Rambam tells us that it's Tuesday afternoon. You did the bris at 8 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you come back to check the baby, and you see, hey, Gavalt, I didn't do the mitzvah so beautifully. You have no right to go back and fix it. What are you making the baby bleach for nothing? What are you accomplishing? There's no kiyum, there's no fulfillment of Hidur Mitzvah out of the realm of the mitzvah proper. And therefore the Rambam understood that this halacha is true b'ein b'chol b'ein b'shabbos. Whereas Rashi clearly disagrees. Rashi says that if it's Shabbos, then I understand why you don't go back. But if it's a weekday, Rashi implies, of course you go back. Even though the mitzvah is over, it doesn't matter. Rashi seems to understand that he, the mitzvah, can stand on its own. You can be yotzei the mitzvah today, and then he, the mitzvah next week. So there's a major machlokes here. It's playing out between Rashi and the Rambam. How do we understand the relationship between Hidur Mitzvah and the Mitzvah? According to the Rambam, it's not a separate mitzvah, a separate kiyum, not a separate fulfillment called Hidur Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is part and parcel of the Mitzvah. If it takes place in the context of the Mitzvah, then it's meaningful. If it's separate and distinct from the Mitzvah, then it's meaningless. Whereas according to Rashi, Hidur Mitzvah can exist on its own two feet, even in the absence of the Mitzvah proper. So it's this machlokes Rashi and the Rambam that started out in Hilchos Mila and Shabbos in terms of the relationship between Hidden Mitzvah and the Mitzvah that now merges into Hilchos Chanukah. So this has become part of a famous interpretation of another Shita of the Rambam about Hilchos Chanukah and another Shita of those who disagree with the Rambam, which found itself in the fourth of the Rambam Kavos in Hilchos Gilul Chanukah Pekdar Alach Alef. So the Rambam begins the fourth parak of Hilchos Chanukah. How many candles do you have to light? So this is taken right out of the Gemara Masechet Shabbos. Mitzvasa sheyia kol bayis ubayis madlik ner echad. The ikar mitzvah, the primary mitzvah of Neres Chanukah, is that every household should light one candle every night. Bein shehoyu anshei bayis ruv, but it doesn't matter if there are 20 people in the family. Bein shelohoyu bo elad echad. Or if it's one person, the mitzvah is ner tana rabbana ner Chanukah ner ishu beiso. That's the bare-bones minimum of the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah. But now, as we're all familiar, the Gemara tells us in the Seder Shabbos, there's the Mahadrin, those who go above and beyond the call of duty, and there's the Mahadrin Minimahadrin, those who go beyond the call of duty. There are different layers, different degrees of Hidur when it comes to Neres Chanukah. So the Rambam interprets that Gemara in the following way. But if you want to know how to do the mitzvah in a little bit of a nicer way, the Rambam continues. Stage two is, the Mahadrin is a mitzvah. Those who want to do the mitzvah a little bit nicer, Madlik Neiros Kiminyan Anshei Abayis Neir L'chol Echad V'Yechad Bein Anoshim Bein Anoshim. So a person lights one candle per the amount of people in the family. So the lowest level of mitzvah is there are 10 people in the family, one candle covers all. The next level is there's one candle per person per night. So no matter what night of Chanukah is, you end up with the same 10 candles a night. But if you want to know what the nicest of the nicest of the nicest is, the Mahadir Yasser out there, the person who wants to go to the top level of Neres Chanukah, the Eisa Mitzvah Min HaMuvchar, and he wants to do the most appropriate manner, Madlik Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad B'Layla HaRishon, U'mosif Ha'olech B'chol Layla Nerechad. So you multiply the amount of people in the house times the night that you want Chanukah, so it's 6 night of Chanukah and 5 people in the family, so there are 30 candles totally, and then on the 8th night of Chanukah, 5 people, you get 40 candles to touch every night. You have the amount of candles times the amount of people in the family. That's what the Rambam interpreted to be Mahadim and a Mahadrin. But if you notice the Lashon of the Rambam, you add on one candle every night. No. Each night you add on another candle per the amount of.
Why do you say that?
No. Because the mitzvah Mukhar is Nadik Ne'er L'chol Echad Alechad Laila Rishon Umbosiv Olev L'chol Laila V'Laila Ne'er Echad per the person in the family. That's the Shita of the Rambam. So if you notice, the Rambam not only gave you a number of how many candles to light, the Rambam also instructed you who should be doing the lighting. The Rambam is very clear. Madlik. There's one Madlik. There's one person doing everything. The Balabayas, whoever's in charge of the menorah, is lighting multiple menorahs for multiple people in the family. That is the highest form of Halachas Mechanica. So now when we take a look at this Rambam and we say, wait a second, is this what we do? And our communities, well, kind of, partially. Namely, we agree in a sense to the Rambam as to the number of candles, because we have, our custom is that all the B'nai Bayis have their own menorah, but on the other hand, we're having a different person lighting them. When we light our menorahs, I don't walk around and light every one of my kids. Each person of the B'nai Bayis lights their own menorah. So wait a second, this is not exactly the Rambam's presentation. So where did our custom come from, that we have different people lighting their own menorahs? So that's based on our Rambam. So we take a look at the fifth of the Rambam Kamos. So the Ramah, it's in Siman Tafresh Ayin Aleph. V'yesh Omrim d'chol echad v'bnei habayis yadlik v'chein ha'minik poshut. Says the Ramah that there are those who say that every member lights. Strangely enough, the Maramochim there is Harambam, which is not 100% accurate. It's accurate in the sense of that it's the right number, but it's not accurate in the sense of who's doing the lighting. So the Ramah quotes the custom that has become a minik posh, becomes the Ashkenazi minik for sure, is that every member of the family lights their own menorah. So what exactly is the point of contention between the Rambam's version of what the greatest level, the highest level of halachas menorah is, and what the Ramah is presenting with our custom is? So following along the lines of what we said before, so the Brisker Rav already develops this idea, and he says what seems to be the point that they're arguing about is the relationship between Hidur Mitzvah and the Mitzvah itself. Let's not forget the Rambam back in Hilchos Mila could not conceive of a Hidur Mitzvah separate and distinct from the Mitzvah proper. And that's why the Rambam could not fathom a person doing a bris at 8 o'clock in the morning and then cleaning it up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If the person goofed entirely and he didn't cut off enough of the Ora Oral and the kids in Oral still, that's not his mitzvah. That's the mitzvah of Vila itself. But if he already finished the mitzvah, now he's just coming back to do some cosmetic work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so the Rambam says you don't do that. Because the Rambam could not fathom that you can have a hidden mitzvah separate and distinct from the mitzvah. Says the Brisker Rav, just as the Rambam couldn't believe that you can separate the mitzvah and the hidur vis-a-vis time, you cannot separate the hidur and the ikar mitzvah vis-a-vis gavra vis-a-vis persons either. It would be inconceivable, according to the Rambam, for me to light a menorah here, and then my child to light a menorah 2 feet away. That if I'm doing one adlaka and he's doing another adlaka, there's no fear, there's no connection between the two, and therefore you have just drawn a distinction between the hidur and the mitzvah, which is not acceptable according to the Rambam. Therefore, the only way to make any sense of mahadrin and mahadrin according to the Rambam is to insist that the same gavra, the same person who did the ikra adlaka, he must do the continuation as well. He must do the hidur, which is exactly what the Rambam says. That the person gets up and he lights 10 menorahs. What is the Rambam hold? The Ramah says, no. The Ramah says, we have no qualms, we have no problems separating the Ikar Mitzvah from the Hidur Mitzvah. Why is that? Because the Ramah in Hilchos Vila didn't put it in the Maram Kosov. The Ramah in Hilchos Vila, the Bas Lank Rashi. The Ramah in Hilchos Vila asking that on Shabbos you don't go back. That's Chil Shabbos, but on a weekday, of course you go back. With the Shaila, of course you would go back at that point. So since the Ramah is siding with Rashi that you can have Hidur out of the context of the mitzvah itself, therefore it makes sense what we do, that we go ahead and we light a menorah, and then someone else lights his menorah, and the third guy in the family, and everybody in the family lights their own menorah. There's no connection between the menorah. It doesn't matter. You can have mitzvah over here, hidur later, mitzvah over here, hidur by another gavra, another person, and that's perfectly okay in the worldview of Rashi, in the worldview of the Rambam. The question is, how does this relate now to how we started our Shabbat? We weren't talking about Bris Mila when we started. We weren't talking about Neves Hanukkah. We're talking about stitches on Shabbos. So what in the world is the connection between these two? So here, the Gemara told us that there is a principle called Kol Zman Shu Oisik B'Mila. That's how the Brisa started off. Go back for a second, back to the first of the Mamakomas. Hazmal Kol Zman Shu Oisik B'Mila. As long as the person in the boil is still being Oisik. Can we go ahead and change that? So the Gemara tells us that as long as the person is Oseik B'Mila, everything's fine. Then you for sure go back. Under all circumstances, you go back. As long as you haven't yet, whatever, literally or figuratively put down that knife, then you're permitted and you're required to go back. The question is, what does that category of Lo Piresh, what does that mean? What are the words of Lo Piresh? What's the significance of that statement? So according to the Rambam, that makes a lot of sense. According to the Rambam, as long as you aren't Piresh, so then you are still allowed to do the mitzvah. So then you're allowed to go back when you're supposed to go back. Because according to the Rambam, if you finish the job, you can't have the mitzvah in a vacuum. But the shear of low of Kozman Shu Isik B'Mila means that the mitzvah is not over yet. So Kozman, you haven't literally put down the mitzvah, you haven't completed the mitzvah, Hidur mitzvah kicks in, and once there's the mitzvah, so that's fine, that's okay. But according to Rashi, we have a lot of problems. Because according to Rashi, there's always hidden mitzvah. Rashi's view is hidden mitzvah exists even out of the context of the mitzvah itself. So why is it that the person can't go back and do the meal at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Because Chil Shabbos won't let you. Because apparently, according to Rashi, hidden mitzvah is not Bechah Shabbos. Meal is Bechah Shabbos, but hidden mitzvah is not Bechah Shabbos. So according to Rashi, the reason why you can't go back at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is because Chil Shabbos is standing in the way. So what does Oseik B'Mila accomplish? Oseik B'Mila must be telling me that's not called a new act of Chul Shabbos. That's called the same Chul Shabbos. Closed mouth, you haven't put the knife down. Halachically, we view that as part of the original Hefter. You're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. You're supposed to be Mechal Shabbos for Mila and Shabbos. Closed mouth, you're still involved in the same action. That's not labeled as a new act of Chul Shabbos. So we have a very, very different reading here between Rashi and the Rambam. What is the Shas, why is it that when you're holding the knife, you can still continue? According to the Rambam, you're allowed to continue because that's Hidur Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is Derech Shabbos, according to the Rambam. But according to Rashi, the reason why you can continue is nothing to do with Hidur Mitzvah. It has to do with a brand new principle in Halacha called Kol Zman, you haven't finished the permissible act of Chol Shabbos. everything, and everything is still mutter, it's still part of the original action. Why is this relevant? So Shlomo Zalman Urbach suggests that this issue may become very, very relevant in terms of the case of the stitches. So going back to the original shayla, a person receives a cut, doctor says, it's got to be stitched up on Shabbos, chashash for infection, maybe even a somewhat of a far-fetched concern if it's a nefesh, if it's a suffix, cold it with becha Shabbos. So we go ahead and we let the Jewish room doctor go ahead stitching up the child, and he tells us the following, that in order to solve infections, I can get away with 5 stitches. But if you want to know my professional opinion, I think the right thing to do is do 10 stitches. If it would be a Tuesday, you wouldn't have any questions. Of course, do 10 stitches. What about on Shabbos? Can the doctor do these additional acts of Chil Shabbos? Is there any grounds to permit that? So Shlomo Zalman suggested that perhaps yes. He says that maybe we can sanction the continuing of the stitches, even though technically, medically, they're not quote-unquote necessary. Because medically necessary, but not technically medically necessary. We can still permit them on Shabbos. Why? So the Shlomo Zalman, it's the same as Koz Manshu, I think, for Mila. Just as the Moel, as long as he hasn't finished, and whatever finishing means. So Kozman, the Moel, hasn't finished, and you continue to finish the job. So too, the surgeon, the person who's stitching you up in the emergency room, has not finished the job yet. He's still holding on to whatever the instruments are that he's stitching you. Still the process of that same Maisa stitching. Kozman, you also the stitching. You could be Chayzer, because it's considered to be the same Maisa. So is that an acceptable proof or not? So at first glance, that depends on Rashi. If you hold that the Pshat of this Gemara is, the reason why you can go back and finish the job is based on Hidur Mitzvah makes sense by Mila. I don't know if there's a Hidur Mitzvah, say Kelim and Be'er, I know that goes on stitching. So when you're doing a Mitzvah Mila, that has to be done by Hidurah. When you're doing a stitching for a wound, you don't do the Hidur Mitzvah, you have to do it, Pekuch Nefesh, but you don't do Pekuch Nefesh by Hidurah. You have to do Pekuch Nefesh to get the job done. So if you go down the route that the matir in this sugya is based on Hidur Mitzvah, that probably wouldn't carry over to stitching on Shabbos. But if you go down the other route, if you go down the route that it's not Hidur Mitzvah that's permitting it, Hidur Mitzvah is not Becher Shabbos. What's permitting it is, it's the same Maisa, so then just as it's the same Maisa of Miva, it should be the same Maisa of Pikuach Nefesh. And since the original stitches were permissible, the subsequent stitches should be permissible as well. So that's one reason, one suggestion that Shlomo Zalman gives in order to be mafter the additional stitches. But then he suggests something totally different, nothing to do with the previous. So again, maybe it's based on an entirely different of rule that governs the Pikuach Nefesh, and that's based on, if we take a look at the fifth of the Ma'amar Kamos at the end, the Mishnah Berurah, in Simen Shinkov Chesed Uch Shabbos, that some of the Rishonim have a lashon that when you take care of a chol shiyesh b'sakana, someone's life is in danger, so you do for the chol shiyesh b'sakana everything you would do during the week. What does that mean? Machol amulafuos, quotes from the Rabban, it means whatever food the doctor says is necessary, whatever medicine the doctor says, everything is mutter b'chol shiyesh b'sakana. Umashma, he has a tremendous chiddush. Af al pi she'ein b'sakana b'meniyas hadavar ha'hu. When the Rishonim used the phrase that you can do whatever is normal, kosher yidim lasas b'yom chol yidu at Shabbos, what that translates to mean is that even those standards of care that are not necessarily emergencies, that means if you don't do it, the cholah will not die. There's no question that his life will not be in danger if you don't do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't matter. Why is that permissible? Kevan she'achol yesh b'sakona. Once the cholah is labeled, halachli as the cholah yesh b'sakona, the yesh b'adav etzarech k'tzav. And there is some need. It's a small need. It's not an emergency need, but it's a some degree of a medical need. And that's a kind of a procedure you would do on a weekday. So one is permitted to do that even at the expense of Chol Shabbos D'araisa, because once he's labeled as the Chol Shesh B'Sakana, so all Tzorchei HaChola become permissible. So this is quoted based on the Magid Mishnah. The Mishnah says this explicitly. So the Mishnah Berurah is not so sure that this should be followed. Says the Mishnah Berurah, I am a Bir Halacha. Mishnah Berurah references what he wrote in the Bir Halacha. She'eveda mikama poskim. Many poskim disagreed. The Svilu, she'afilu b'mokam she'tzor achilu. Even in a situation where you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos, ein mechal ala Yisrael, al b'dobish she'esh lochosh bo, she'im lo ya'aseh lo, yichbar lo b'chol yo, yuchol istakein. The heter pikuach nefesh is, you're allowed to do whatever is necessary. And if the doctor tells you, listen, there's a talk, to make a call, what is absolutely necessary. So the doctor says, listen, there's a chance that if we don't do such and such, condition may weaken, the situation may become more serious, and there's a chashash of a more additive sakana, that's also okay. That's fine. Aval says the Mishnah Berurah, the box stops here. But if you have something that is absolutely clear, the doctor tell you there is absolutely no risk to his life based on not doing this, even though he needs it, quote unquote needs. And it's something that we would do on Tuesday. You can do it a day. Good, that's all right. That's okay. But to do it, not only must the chola be a chola sheish b'sakana, but the particular procedure that you're doing must be a direct correlation to saving him from danger. If it's just being done for some other external reason, even though it's something that would be done as regular standards of care during the week, that is not sanctioned on Shabbos. So Mr. Brewer concludes that Kain Vavadim and Nochem Ahachim Bisa Shotorah. So Shabbos and Aisha, and the Chozak are dying anyway. So he doesn't think that it's so critical. He doesn't think that one should be doing those kinds of activities. The question is, even according to the Mekilim, I'm not even saying we follow the Mekilim, even according to the Mekilim, according to the Magen Mishnah, the first interpretation, you can do kol Torah Yechola. What exactly constitutes Torah Yechola? Where do you draw the line? So Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying, what would the din be if the Chola tells he's laying in the hospital, he just had a serious surgery, so he's clearly a gav with the Chola Sheish Mishakana, and he says he wants to read the newspaper. Please go to the store and buy me a newspaper. That's what Shlomo Zalman's example. It wasn't Ola Ladas of Shlomo Zalman, so he has to turn on the TV. I don't think that was even in the world view of Shlomo Zalman, or maybe they didn't have TVs in the hospital where Shlomo Zalman was writing. So he said, the Chayla says, go to the store and buy me a newspaper. If the Chayla asked you on Tuesday to buy a newspaper, you're going to buy me a newspaper. Of course you buy me a newspaper. So he says to Shlomo Zalman, you're allowed to do that. That's Tzarchi HaChola. So Shlomo Zalman says he doesn't believe it. He doesn't describe exactly in terms why not. He says, I can't believe it. What are you talking about? I think what Shlomo Zalman is probably describing is the difference between what we usually use terms, wants and needs. It means there are needs and there are wants. Now, within the world of needs, there are different degrees. There are absolutely critical medical needs, and then there are the physical needs that chalas, things that generally make him comfortable. So let's say, the marshal, the doctor's got him on a regimen of medication, he's on his IV, whatever he's got. And the grandmother walks in and says, I think he needs a bowl of chicken soup and a Shabbos. Let's cook the bowl of chicken soup. Is that called a medical need? Not a medical doctor. Is certain the person will not die because of chicken soup. On the other hand, the pie tastes good. May make him feel a little bit better. And on Tuesday, we would do that in a minute. I mean, that's not against the other medical needs at that point. The Magen Mishnah would sanction that. That's called a tzorchei achoyla. That's a need of a chayla. A want of a chayla is, wants to watch the movie, wants to read a newspaper. That's a want of a chayla. When my kids were little, so I used to like to do the following game with them. Whenever they would say, I need this, and I need that, and I need that, so we'd stop. So I want you to make two columns. I said, I want you to list 10 things that you need and 10 things that you want. And I wanted to see, as time would go on, how the pizza and the ice cream would somehow leave the column of the needs and become the column of the wants. So when they knew, once the kids got what I wanted of this game, so then they knew how to win some points with me. So they wrote on the need column, we need Torah. We need mitzvahs. We only want ice cream. We only want pizza. They knew they got the right things in the right columns. They would end up getting the pizza and the ice cream. So comes the Magen Mishnah with this tremendous kula that all needs, whatever that's defined as, are okay, including Chol Shabbos. And the Mishnah is not so sure we should follow this. The Brisker Rav quotes from his father, from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim held that the Ikra then is like the Magen Mishnah. That's against the Mishnah Berurah. So the Gedolei HaPoskim, Arei HaMazeh, have different opinions about this. So Shlomo Zalman, in that same piece about stitches, writes, maybe this is the second reason to permit the additional stitches. Why? Forgetting about the Bris Mila, the Deres Chanukah, the Maislach, the Pirish, the Maisa, it's Tachos. The person comes to the emergency room for stitches. So the doctor says, okay, 5 stitches is absolutely medically necessary. The rest of the stitches, that's a want. That's a need. I mean, that's a normal need. The normal way you would stitch a person on Tuesday would be the 10 stitches. That's like Machol Mufuos. So even though the additional 5 stitches are not absolutely critical, and if he doesn't have them, the doctor ensures us the wound will not get infected, it doesn't matter. That's still considered to be part of Tzarchei HaChola, and according to the Magen Mishnah, according to Reb Chaim held, so Tzarchei HaChola and Mutar and Shabbos, even if they're not absolutely emergency needs. So Shlomo Zalman said, a combination of these two svaras, I think one has a right to be made of, that according to some interpretations, the Gemara about Bris Mila, based on the Neir's Chanukah understanding, so it could be that just the fact that you're involved in the Chada Maisa, so that's one independent Svara, that's the same Maisa Achilu, so that's okay. And even without that Svara, the fact that it qualifies as Tzorchei HaChola,
even if it's not absolutely emergency chitzachim, that would also be acceptable. To make matters even better in this, Rambam also throws out the possibility we're not even 100% sure what malacha deraita is involved in stitching in the first place. He says, which malacha exactly you're violating? So your initial reaction would be tofer, it's sewing. Not so simple that the malacha of tofer even applies to goof other the person's skin. Not so precious what the malacha is exactly. So since we're not exactly sure what the malacha is, and we asked a couple of good stadim to believe that it's probably mutter, so Rosh Hashanah is mekel al halacha. So the person comes and asks me, you know, even though one could argue with each of the svarim, the first svar is malacha is rashinam, the second malacha, bottom line is the tier of the two and the tier of the fact. We're not even sure how what the terrible list of stitches in the first place that there is. So therefore, those who want to follow Shlomo Zalman, definitely yeshal mi lismach, not to cause the child to have a scar for life. So one has the right to be mako based on a whole bunch of these different svaras. So as strange as it may sound, part of this sugya of the stitching on Shabbos has its roots in the Mila, which ultimately impacts the Chos Chanukah. See, a lot of different areas of halacha that at first glance have nothing to do with one another all end up impacting and ultimately converging together in order to address this very, very real shayla halacha. Right, only the starting point is the Yeshua Sekun. So we're assuming that if it's the wound is deep enough to have to be stitched, there's always that concern of infection. Yeah, Mil Yachim for sure, because that's at least the Cholosh Ember Sekun. And the Cholosh Ember Sekun, that's for sure. Next week, the only going to be around next Wednesday night. Maybe we should turn off this day first.
Every year we have the Shiloh, and every year we have the Sigma Slogan.